Good morning. Genesis chapter 6 is where we'll be this morning. Genesis chapter 6. This is a tough story in Genesis chapter 6 for a number of reasons. Now, it's interesting to me that it took me a while to get to the point where this was a tough story. I don't know how you grew up with this, but my first inclination of Noah's Ark was probably the little people ark set. If you remember way back in the day, and it had the little animals and the little Noah and the little Mrs. Noah and all of that, we had one in every church nursery I could think of. It was just one of those things that was kind of a rite of passage of childhood with Noah's Ark. And so because you saw little smiling Noah and little smiling Mrs. Noah and this great little plastic boat and all these fun little animals, you thought, what a great story. Isn't this exciting? It's all about a boat and animals and all of these things. And you don't stop as a child and think about, but what about everybody else? In our culture today, when they look at this story, they really struggle with this idea of death. They really struggle with the idea that God would place this kind of a judgment on people where so many would be wiped out and so few would be saved. And I hope we will find a balance this morning of the two sides of this story, which clearly is a lot of death and loss that goes on, that I hope we can trust in God for his reason behind, but more a story of deliverance. And we see a story of God's grace in the midst of the struggle. Beginning in verse 5, we will skip over the Nephilim. You can study the Nephilim on your own time at the beginning of chapter 6. If you saw the Noah movie with Russell Crowe a few years ago, apparently they're giant rock people. I don't believe they're actually giant rock people, but that was pretty good CGI, I guess. But we will not get into the Nephilim because we could spend our whole time there if we're not careful. Beginning of verse 5. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. I don't know what you think of our world today. Now, I probably have more ideas than I would like to because I see what you post on Facebook. But I think we all have ideas about what this world is like and how it's gone off the deep end and all of those kinds of things. And at other times, we probably see moments of grace in the midst of our world, and so we think there's hope there. The world in which Noah lives is evil in a way that I don't know that we can fully comprehend the level of. Because you may have, from time to time, an evil thought run through your mind. And you may, if you are a follower of God, following that evil thought, think to yourself something like, why did I think that? Or maybe you find yourself resting on that thought a little bit and maybe feeling guilty about that later. And we gradually, I hope, are trying to change the way our minds think when it comes to things of this world and things of God. For these folks, their minds rested on evil. Their minds rested on how ungodly can we be, how far from God can we go. These were the things they thought about a lot. And I don't know what your mind goes to when there's nothing there. I don't know what your mind goes to when you're at rest, whether it's memories or dreams of the future or struggles or good things or sports or, you know, whatever it might be. But I don't think for most of us it goes to evil all the time. And even for those within our world that we may look at and think, wow, those folks are a mess. I don't think in their minds it goes to evil all the time. These folks had gone so far away from God, and we're so far removed from where we were last week with thinking of Enoch and his family following and walking with God. These folks are going the other way. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. Which brings us, I think, to the question of what troubles God's heart. And clearly it is that these men, their thoughts are so evil, and this is what they rest on, that God began to question and to regret having made them in the first place. You ever done something you regret? I think most of us probably have, if not all of us. You wish you could take that thing back, that thing you said, that thing you did. It's so hard to get hold of once it is done. And for God, he sees where this is going and thinks, would this have been better just without them? Would this have been better with no creation at all? So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground, for I regret that I have made them. God is looking for a reset. Staples had not too long ago the red button. I don't think they do those ads anymore, but it's that that button when everything's going in the wrong direction, you need to fix it, you hit that button. God is looking for the reset of mankind. God realizes that things have gone so far astray that he wants to re-begin. And we see, I think, what we saw with God in the beginning, which is, this is a God who creates. And this God has seen that his creation has gone so far off track that it is time for him to once again recreate. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Noah is one person. And it's interesting to me that as you read this story and look at the words here, we really don't hear a whole lot about what kind of person Mrs. Noah is. We don't even get her name. We don't hear a lot about what kind of men Shem, Ham, and Japheth are at this point, what kind of people their spouses will be. What we find out is Noah is a righteous man, him alone. So think about this for a minute. I think we feel like sometimes we are very much in the minority as Christians. And some days, believe me, it definitely feels like that. What would it be like to be the only one? Or if you want to assume maybe Noah's family at this point is on board, what would it be like if it was just your family? Your family were the only ones in a world full of folks that were their minds on evil all the time. How difficult would it be to continue to do the right thing? How difficult would it be to continue to think on things of God? How difficult would it be to, when everyone around you expects so little of you, to go above and beyond? And maybe you feel like that already some days, but it's interesting to me to think of Noah in the midst of all this, in the midst of all this evil, the evil that is so prevalent in his day that God is ready to reset with the exception of Noah and his family. What would it be like to be those people? And if you feel at times like it's just too much, think of Noah. Think of what it would be like to be in that position and to continue on. Now, the earth was corrupt in God's sight. It was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, notice a key word as we're going through this verse, by the way, corrupt, corrupt, corrupt. God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I'm surely going to destroy both them and the earth. They had corrupted. And if you remember back a few weeks when we first saw the creation and then the creation of man that came, we talked about the idea that God likes to create and to bring order out of chaos. And I think in chapter 6 here, we start to see people desperately trying to bring chaos back out of the order that God has created. They are corrupting the system that is in place. They're corrupting the creation that God wants. They are corrupting everything as God sees it, and God must then do something about it. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms on it, in it, and coat it with pitch inside and out. God is, even in the midst of this plan of destruction, also planning for salvation. It's so easy to look at this story and just think of it as the wiping out of everything, and yet we forget that God still has a plan to save. Because beyond just bringing order out of chaos, this is a big piece of who God is. God desires to save. God is not content that everyone die. God is not content that everyone be away from him. God wants people to be with him in a relationship with him. And because of that, he is going to save. And I don't know what imagery that brings to your mind. I'm always amazed when I see these stories of rescues that go on, whether it's something on the coast where people try desperately to get someone that's been taken out by a sneaker wave or who's fallen off of the rocks or something like that, and you see the Coast Guard spring into action. I thought of that as Jim was wearing his uniform this morning. You see the Coast Guard spring into action. You see them do the things that they have trained to do. Where I grew up in Mobile, Alabama, we had the Gulf of Mexico nearby, and we saw those Coast Guard helicopters flying over all the time doing their training missions. And I always thought, what a neat thing to be out there with the opportunity to save someone. Last year, here at our church, the Casey's son came and taught us all CPR. Taught us all how to use the defibrillator machine back there that I hope we never have to use. Taught us how to breathe life into someone, how to do chest compressions, all of those things. And I thought, what would it be like to actually have to do this? Not be a dummy on the ground that you're learning all this stuff on, but to actually have to rescue and to breathe life into someone. What kind of moment would that be? How would you never forget that? Or if you were on the other side of it, never forget the one who did it for you? And that is what God wants to do for us. He sees us as people desperately in need of salvation, and he wants to bring it. And for Noah and his family, he is not content to let them go in this flood. He has for them a plan of how to get out of it. This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. We don't do cubits nowadays, but just to suffice to say, large boat. Very big boat. If you've seen, there's a guy in, I believe it's Kentucky, that has built one according to specifications from what I've been told, and people, when they come up on it, are just amazed at the size of the thing. Make room for it. Leaving, and he's not playing for a flood, by the way. He just wants people to come see the boat. Nothing to worry about. Make a roof for it, leaving below the roof and opening one cubit high all around. Put a door on the side of the ark and make lower, upper, and middle decks. God gives him a detailed plan. It's always really interesting to me when I see depictions of the ark in art, or in modern times, or even the little people one that we had in the nursery when I was a kid. They never look like this. I don't get it. I don't get how complex is a door and a window. It's just not that everybody's got to put lots of windows around the side. Everybody's got to put all this bells and whistles and stuff on it. And they're not getting what Noah got, which is God has laid out a very specific plan here. I think I'll go with God's plan. And when we get off from that plan, isn't that when we get ourselves in trouble? Isn't the getting away from that plan why we find ourselves at the flood in the first place here in chapter 6? And too often we will look at the plan of God and we know it. We were on Wednesday night studying Romans chapter 1, and it was laid out there by Paul that even if we don't see the law before us and read the law before us, the law is on our hearts. We know God has placed it there when he created us. God gives this plan for us, and too many times we want to get away from the plan. I like Jesus, but I don't like the church. How many times have you heard that? I like Jesus, but I don't like Christians. Now, not to say that we don't give folks reason at times. And I think all of us have had experiences or known folks that have had experiences that understand exactly where that comes from. But did God ever intend that we are people who follow Jesus and people who are Christians without the church in place? No. And if the church is a problem, then we do what we can to repair the church. We don't walk away from it. God gives a plan for how things are to be done, to Noah and to us. And Noah did everything just as God commanded him, as God commanded. I hope the first question we come to anytime we come to a difficult decision in life is, what would God have me to do here? And so many times he has put that in place for us. So many times it is laid right out there in Scripture what it is we should do, how we should live, how we should interact. Noah was 600 years old. Okay, now think about this for a minute. I don't know how to do all the math on this, but folks were living 800-900 years at this point in time, and he's 600 years old. So maybe if we want to put it in today's terminology, if folks are living 80 or 90 years, Noah's 60, something along those lines, and building this boat for all this time. And as he builds this boat, I would imagine neighbors of Noah or people nearby, as they see this big monstrosity being built, probably look over there and think, what is he doing? That guy's crazy. And now you have added to the evil thoughts that they're already having, probably some of the, you understand there's no water near you, right, Noah? I mean, that's a big boat. How do you plan to get that to where there's water? And have to answer those questions day after day. And how many of us would begin to question ourselves at some level as we're going along, and yet Noah keeps plugging along, keeps doing everything by God's design, because he knows that's what needs to be done. Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives entered the ark to escape the waters of the flood. God provides escape. You think you're in the middle of something that cannot be overcome? God provides escape. You think that life is too difficult and there's not a way to do this in a better way. You think that people around you are too much in control of what's going on. Whatever it might be, God provides escape. You think sin has got a stranglehold on you and you can't get rid of it. God provides escape, because this is what God does. In the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day all the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of the heaven were open, and rain fell on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, I don't want to get into a rain science debate this morning, but I will tell you, wherever you've thought about this in the past, there are those who feel like that this is the first time rain hits the earth. And I don't know where you're at on that, and I don't think your salvation is dependent on it or anything like that. It's an interesting discussion. There are those who feel like the separation from creation was there, and the water that came onto the earth was through the mists that are described in creation, and that's how things grew. I don't know. I think both theories hold a lot of water, if you can say it that way. But imagine, if you will, if that is true. If it is, and again, I don't think your salvation depends on either side of this. If it is true that this is the first time that rains fall, and you are a person walking around, and that first drop of water falls from the sky, what is going through your mind? What is this all about? The closest thing I can liken it to is, if you've ever been to LA and it rains, people don't know what to do. People start driving their cars into each other, or they're trying to find where the windshield wipers are at. It never rains down there. And I've watched an LA news report of rain, and there's like people stationed around doing live reports of just water falling from the sky, and they all start to freak out. If you could imagine if water has never fallen from the sky, and you see this first raindrop fall, and then more rain, and more rain, and more rain, and then you come out on day two, and it's still raining, and you come out on day three, and it's still raining, and now the water is starting to kind of rise up from the ground, you wouldn't know what in the world to do. And suddenly this crazy Noah over there is starting to look a little more wise than you thought. Rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Here in Eugene, we could probably appreciate this more than most. The waters flooded the earth for 150 days, but God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him on the ark, and he sent a wind over the earth, and the waters receded. Now, it's pretty quick there, the end part of the flood, and I know we skipped over a little bit about the animals coming in and all of that. 40 days of rain, 150 days of flood. God remembers Noah. The waters begin to recede. God remembered. Now, this morning, clearly a lot of us are in this mindset already of Memorial Day. I've seen a few red, white, and blue outfits around. Clearly, I'm not on campaign, but there's stuff behind me. We like to remember in our country. Unfortunately, we don't always do a good job of remembering because Memorial Day has turned a little more into mattress sales and things like that. In my house, there are a couple things that are notable as you walk in. I told my Bible class this morning about one of them. If you walk in the back door of our house, because if you know us, that's where you would walk in, my mom's house, excuse me, in Alabama. You walk in the back door because no one uses the front door. We didn't have a key to it for about 10 years. You walk in the back door of the house, you come into the living room, you look to your left, and there on the left wall of my mom's house is the most embarrassing 16 by 20 picture of me in a Cub Scout uniform as a 9-year-old. And every friend of mine who walks in and sees it starts to laugh. I have a friend that I have told, when my mom goes on, the picture is his. And he can put it in his house or his office and just revel in it. But that is on one wall. And if you turn to the right on another wall, there is a letter from Harry Truman on the wall. And there is a grandfather who I have never met, because in 1944, I believe it was, he gave his life in service. And that letter there on the wall helps us to remember. I am able to remember someone I have never even met because I can't see that letter and not think of it. We are built around this idea of remembering, and I will tell you the reason that we are is because God put that within us. And here in this story, what you see is all of these folks who are evil all of the time, God sees one family in the midst of it and said, this is the family we're starting over with. And as they're riding out this flood on the boat, and the way the flood is described in the verses we skipped over is that it covered all the mountaintops. Huge flood. Which, by the way, and we also won't go off on this tangent, there is a lot of scientific evidence for the idea that there was a large global flood with where sediment is and where fossils are and all of these things. Pretty amazing. Every now and then science actually confirms instead of denies. Big flood covering the earth, and God remembers this family that is out there in the boat. So further on down in chapter 8, floodwaters recede. Noah sends out a bird, and the bird comes back. Noah sends out another bird, and there's this sending out of birds, and birds coming back, and finally one comes back with the olive branch, and Noah realizes, hey, things are growing again, or at least the trees are now visible, and then he sends out a last bird, and the bird never comes back, because the bird has found a place to go, and Noah realizes, okay, it's time to open the door, time to get out of the boat. And then what does Noah do when he gets out of the boat? Noah built an altar to the Lord. And taking some of the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. God remembered Noah, and now Noah remembers God. We remember the sacrifice this morning. We are a people that are built around this idea of remembering. And usually when we get ourselves into trouble, part of it is when we get off of the plan that God had set forth as he sets out these details and we just decide to do a different way or don't think about it. Or part of it is when we forget. So God puts in place for us ways to remember. Noah remembered by building this altar. And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and every living creature with you. A covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind." God places a sign because God understands we have a need to remember, and sometimes the way to remember that is visually. And so God places this rainbow there because it's something he can see and something that Noah and his family and people on down the line after can see, that when this rainbow is there, we can remember that God has a covenant with us. And we do the same thing, I think, today. We have lots of signs and things that we use as memories. Places where there is a tribute, places where there is a statue, places where there is a plaque where that we can remember what has been done. Now for us, the sign continues on in the New Testament. And this is one of those places that I believe is just the beauty of what God does. Because we see a God who is described as regretting that he made these people. And yet at the same time, we see a God who has this plan in motion all of the time as to how this is going to work. And as Noah and his family are saved here through water, God is already planning that water is going to be a part of the plan and how we are saved as well. In 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter writes, "For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous and the unrighteous, or for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. He was put to death in the body, but made alive in the spirit. After being made alive, he went and made proclamation to the imprisoned spirits, to those who were disobedient long ago when God waited patiently." God waited patiently. So many times we look at this story and it's the wrath of God, and you don't think about the fact, how patiently did God wait for a while as they continued in evil? God waited patiently in the days of Noah while the ark was being built. In it, only a few people, eight in all, were saved through water. And this water symbolizes baptism that now saves you also, not the removal of dirt from the body, but the pledge of a clear conscience towards God. It saves you by the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is at God's right hand with angels, authorities, and powers in submission to him. And like God brought to Noah salvation, God brings to us this morning salvation. If we will just be the people who choose him instead of everything else. And this morning, if you have not experienced that water of baptism, this would be a great day to do that, an easy way to remember around Memorial Day that this is when you did. This morning, if you have experienced that salvation in those waters, but you feel like you have moved further away from God and you know you need to get back, this would be a great time to restore that walk with God and to be with him again. This morning, if your church family can pray for you in some way, if there's something you need to share with us, if you have any needs at all, please come while we stand and sing.